Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm Janet Hutchings, EQMM's editor. This month we feature the work of Frankie Y. Bailey, whose first story for EQMM appears in our July issue this year. The author is a professor of criminal justice at the University at Albany, and she's produced 5 novels in a series starring Lizzie Stewart, crime historian. Here is Frankie Bailey reading her EQMM story from the Lizzie Stewart series, In Her Fashion.
Gallagher, Virginia, October 2004. Dr. Stewart, this came for you while you're out. Hearing the excitement in her graduate assistant's voice, Lizzie Stewart glanced up an email she was writing to facilities management. Keisha McIntyre was clutching a large brown cardboard box in her arms. I'm not expecting anything. Who's it from? Keisha shook her head, making her braids sway. That's the really weird part, Dr. Stewart. The delivery guy didn't know. He said one of the other delivery men was about to go out on his route when he saw this box beside his truck. When he picked it up, he saw the envelope that was attached. What was in the envelope? Money, in cash, enough to cover the delivery. So he took it into the office, and they opened it to make sure it wasn't something dangerous. And then their supervisor said the package had been paid for and had an address label, so just do the paperwork and deliver it. But there isn't any return address. Lizzie said. What do you think it is? No idea. Lizzie pushed back in her desk chair and stood up. Hand it over and we'll find out. Maybe it's something for the conference, Keisha said. None of the organizations we've been working with would send a package by leaving it beside a delivery truck. No, I guess not. It's really weird. A little odd, Lizzie said, being careful not to offer Keisha encouragement that would send her off and running. Lizzie reached into her desk drawer, pushing aside a box of staples and a tube of hand lotion to find her scissors. She slipped through the sticky brown tape and pulled back the flaps of the box. Oh, Keisha said, before a similar exclamation could escape Lizzie's own lips. Lizzie lifted the lush black velvet garment from the tissue paper and held it up. The upper lapels of the evening coat were claret red, the same color as the cowl hood. Keisha said, "That is so cool, Dr. Stewart. It looks retro, like the 1930s or 40s. Lizzie stretched the coat out over the back of her desk chair. I think you're right about the era. Maybe it's a gift, Keisha said. Maybe Mr. Quinn found it and knew you'd like it and sent it as a surprise. And left a box beside a delivery truck? Lizzie smiled. Cops, even ex-cops, don't have that much faith in human nature. Keisha gestured towards the coat. Aren't you going to try it on? Even if Mr. Quinn didn't send it, it could be a gift from someone. You should try it on and see if it fits. Lizzie turned back to the box that the coat had come in. Or maybe someone's making an anonymous donation to the Institute. But why would someone send a retro coat to the Institute for the Study of Southern Crime and Culture? Keisha said. Vintage. Clothing actually made during an era is called vintage. And clothes, Keisha, are a part of our Southern culture. But this coat is really glamorous, like someone bought it in a swank store in New York or someplace. That doesn't mean someone couldn't have worn it here in Gallagher on chilly evenings when she was out and about. Lizzie held up the folded piece of paper that had slipped underneath the tissue paper in the box. This may answer our questions. The sheet of paper had been torn from a spiral notebook. The tattered edges were still attached. There was one sentence in the middle of the page. What does it say? Keisha said. Not much. Lizzie passed her the page with a single line of awkward print. Sending you this before I meet my maker, Keisha read out loud. Her maker, does she mean God? That would be my guess. But the note doesn't go with the coat, doesn't it? I mean, the coat doesn't look like it belonged to someone who would write a note on paper like that. What kind of woman would this coat have belonged to? To a woman who would write letters on monogram stationery, Keisha said, with a fountain pen, and she wouldn't write about meeting her maker. Hiring Keisha as her graduate assistant at the Institute had been a mistake, Lizzie thought. Keisha was given to the same flights of imagination that she was herself, and that was not always a good thing. But, Lizzie said, the woman who owned this coat must be old by now, and maybe the paper was what she had handy, a sheet of paper from a grandchild's or even a great-grandchild's notebook. Maybe she has arthritis, and it's easier to print than write in a fancy hand. And maybe she's been thinking about distributing her worldly goods before she dies. But why send a coat anonymously? Keisha said. And if she's an old woman, then she probably didn't hobble up to the delivery truck with a big box in her arms. Maybe she asked one of her grandchildren to drop it off, Lizzie said. That could be how it ended up beside the truck. The grandchild was in a hurry to get someplace else, saw the delivery truck, and assumed the delivery man would find the box, assumed that the box would end up where his or her grandmother wanted it to go. Okay, Keisha said, so how do we find out who sent it? We don't need to find out who sent it. Lizzie held out her hand for the note. Keisha passed it over, but she was frowning. But we can't just... The concept of an anonymous donation is that you accept the gift without trying to track down who sent it. But maybe there's some really interesting story about... If the person who sent the coat wanted us to know the story, she would have included the information about it. Not if she has arthritis and can't write and couldn't get any of her grandchildren to sit down and write it all out for her. I bet she'd be glad if we found her and gave her a chance to... Keisha? Yes, Dr. Stewart. Lizzie gestured towards the door. It's after 5. Go meet your boyfriend. Go have a relaxing evening. We have a conference to put on beginning at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning. But don't you want to know? What I want is to have the conference that we spent months planning, the first conference for the Institute, go off without a hitch. Speaking of which, have you touched base with the students you line up to handle registration check-in tomorrow? Got it covered, Keisha said. And Dr. Feely and I went over the to-do list again while you were out to make sure we're good to go. Where is Dr. Feely, by the way? Oh, I forgot. She said to tell you that she went to campus to make sure Dean Ballard knows what he's supposed to do tomorrow when he welcomes everyone and introduces the provost. She said she was going home from there and for you not to stay here half the night because there's nothing else left to do, but she'll touch base with you later. Thanks for remembering to give me your message. I would have remembered, Dr. Stewart, but I was on the phone when you came in, and then I wanted to know what was in the box. Her gaze went back to the velvet coat stretched across Lizzie's desk chair. You really aren't going to try to find out? No, I'm not, Lizzie said. Now go home. Are you leaving now, too? Right behind you. See you bright and early tomorrow morning. Okay, but it would only take a moment to call the delivery company. Maybe someone else there. Keisha? Yes, ma'am. Is that the shipping receipt? And I'll put it away for safekeeping. Keisha passed over the yellow carbon that she had brought in with the box. I wasn't going to call, honest. I hear what you said about waiting until after the conference. I did not say we would wait until after the conference. I said... I know, Keisha said, flashing her grin. See you in the morning, Dr. Stewart. I'm going to go meet Marcus and get pizza. Have fun, Lizzie said. See you tomorrow. Yes, ma'am. Our conference is going to be great. Here's hoping. Lizzie listened to her graduate assistant's light, rapid footsteps as she went down the hall, paused at the reception desk, and then left, closing the heavy front door behind her. Alone in the Victorian house that they had received from their benefactor, Charlotte Wingate, Lizzie studied the spot on the wainscoting that the painters had missed during the renovations. That spot had been annoying her for months. One day she would have to get a ladder and fix it. What had been left of the paint was stored down in the basement. She turned and surveyed the black velvet evening coat stretched out over her desk chair. The claret-red cowl was unexpected, nothing monk-like about it in color or fabric. Worn up and covering the head to add intrigue, or down as the loose collar for the coat. Keisha was right. It was rather a glamorous garment for Gallagher, Virginia in the 1930s or 40s. On the other hand, at least one cotton mill heiress from Gallagher had married into European aristocracy. Several others had married Yankees and joined the ranks of American aristocracy. "No," Lizzie said out loud, "you're not going to think about this now. Put the coat back in the box, put the box in the closet, and leave it there until the conference is over." She started to reach for the coat and realized she was still holding the bill of lading. She opened the desk drawer and shoved it inside, towards the back. The coat, when she picked it up, felt like a stuffed rabbit she'd had when she was a child. The toy rabbit her grandfather, Walter Lee, a sleeping car porter, had brought her from New Orleans when he was assigned to that train route. A velveteen rabbit. She'd call him Hoppy. Not terribly original. And she was absolutely not going to try on the coat. She might damage it. But it did seem to be in good condition for a vintage garment. Maybe they could do an exhibition of vintage clothing with the coat as one of the centerpieces. Have to find a crime tie-in, but that shouldn't be too difficult. Maybe pre-World War II nightlife. Lizzie folded the coat and put it back into the box, drawing the tissue paper over it. She carried the box over to her closet and put it down on the floor inside. One more quick check of the conference program to make sure they hadn't missed anything, and then home. She'd promised Quinn that she'd be home at a decent hour tonight. He was making dinner at her house, and he expected her to be there to eat it. The vintage clothing store was closed on Monday. On Tuesday morning, Lizzie pulled into the parking lot with the box containing the coat on the seat beside her. She was early because she had shrugged off her robe and grabbed her skirt and sweater as soon as Quinn left. She glanced at her watch and back at the door where the "sorry, we're closed" sign was still on display. She had not told Keisha or Quinn what she intended to do. Keisha because she would have wanted to come along, and Quinn because she had made the mistake of using the word "intriguing" when she was telling him about the coat, and is Lizzie getting into something else, antenna had gone up. If she had told him what she was going to do, she could have explained that she needed to know more about the garment itself if she were going to put it on display. But Quinn had enough to occupy his mind. He didn't need distractions from setting up the cold case investigations unit that he and Wade Garner had agreed Quinn would head if he accepted a partnership in Wade's security firm. When everything had turned out much better than she had hoped, she did not want to do anything to make Quinn regret his efforts to accommodate her career. Someone in the shop came to the door and turned over the oven sign. Lizzie got out of her car. The owner of the vintage store was named Carol Barker. When Lizzie identified herself as the woman who had called on Saturday afternoon about the coat, Barker left her assistant to mind the front of the store and ushered Lizzie into her workroom and back. Barker circled around the coat that she had put on a padded hanger. "It is in good condition," she said, confirming Lizzie's assessment. A bit of wear on one of the elbows, deep creases, as if it were folded for storage, but the creases can be steamed out. Barker opened the coat and they looked at the lining. "I don't know that much about the fabric," Lizzie said. "Is that silk?" "Cream satin." Barker leaned closer. "See this?" "You mean the tear," Lizzie said. "I noticed that. Someone sewed it up." "Could have been normal wear and tear," Barker said. "Looks like about an inch and a half." "Aside from the tear that was mended," Lizzie said, "the stitches holding the lining to the coat, that cross stitch, looks almost as if it were done by hand." "By machine," Barker said, "but this coat was custom tailored." "There isn't any label." The customer might have preferred that. Barker pushed her glasses up on her nose and straightened. "If you need a description for your exhibition, call it an Art Deco black velvet, full-length evening coat, circa 1930s. "Could you write that down for me?" Lizzie said. "Of course, I'll be glad to." Barker reached for a pad on the table. "Would that have been the late 1930s or earlier?" Lizzie said. "I'm going to hedge my bets and say mid. I'd have to do a bit more research to be able to get closer to the year, but more likely to be the 1930s than 1940s, Lizzie said. "Definitely. The bias panel that made the coat flare when the wearer walked is typical of the 1930s, but it might have been worn into the 1940s. With the war on, women took care of and held onto their clothes, especially well-designed garments like this coat. Did you notice that interior pocket? Lizzie nodded. A nice touch. Thank you so much for your help. I really appreciate this. You're very welcome. Barker handed her the description of the coat. Was the delivery company able to tell you any more about who sent it? No, they have a steady stream of customers going in and out of the office carrying packages. No one noticed when one of them left his or her box outside beside a delivery truck, Lizzie said. So it looks like the sign on this glamorous garment will read Anonymous Donor. The elderly woman sitting at her usual table by the kitchen door fastened her gaze on Lizzie. Well, it's about time you came to see me. Thought you stopped eating. Lizzie leaned down to kiss the 91-year-old proprietor of the Orleans Cafe on her wrinkled cheek. I was busy with the conference I told you about. Set yourself down, child, Miss Alice said, gesturing towards one of the three empty chairs at her private table. Where's that man of yours? Lizzie settled into her chair and felt her stomach begin to rumble at the delicious odors coming from the kitchen. The lunchtime menu at Miss Ellis's cafe was almost as good as the dinner menu. Quinn's supposed to be meeting me here. He should be along any minute. If he isn't, I'm going to start without him because I am hungry. Too busy working to eat like you oughta. Miss Alice, before Quinn gets here, I'd like to ask you about something. Miss Ellis leaned forward over the carved African cane she had in her hand. Up to it again, are you? Up to what, ma'am? You know what? Snooping around and getting yourself in trouble. You're lucky that man of yours is willing to put up with that. Not only put up with, put a ring on your finger. Lizzie looked down at her ruby engagement ring in its antique setting. She smiled. And he does have good taste, doesn't he? You think I'm joking, child? But you keep on giving that man grief and you'll send him running. And there's plenty of women out there who'll have their arms open wide to catch him as he's passing by. Yes, ma'am, I know. And I'm not snooping. I'm getting ready for an exhibition at the Institute. And I just want to ask you about a coat that someone sent me. What I know about a coat that someone sent you? I don't sell coats here. Lizzie smiled. But knowing your excellent memory, ma'am, I thought you might remember if you'd ever seen this particular coat. Lizzie took the photograph she'd taken of the coat out of her shoulder bag and pushed it across the table. Miss Alice peered down at it. Looks like one of them coats the women used to wear in old movies. Women don't dress like that these days. Of course, most of them didn't in the old days either, except the rich white ones who could afford to put fancy clothes on their backs. Weren't that many black women dressing like that. Except for church, we black women always dressed ourselves for church. If we had nice clothes, church was when we wore them. And did you ever see someone here in Gallagher wearing a coat like this one? Lizzie said, glancing at the door to see if Quinn was in sight. Ain't the kind of coat a respectable woman would have worn to church. No black woman in this town likely to have paid that much for no coat unless she was always going to Richmond or somewhere and had some place to wear it. More like a coat one of them young white women would have had for one of their sorees or balls, but I wouldn't have been there to see her wear it. Lizzie nodded. I was just hoping you might remember something. You say someone sent you this here coat? Yes, ma'am. It was delivered to the Institute last Wednesday. No return address. I'm assuming someone wants to donate it to the Institute. But I want to find out more about the coat, if there is some story behind it. If there was some story behind it, and the person who sent it wanted you to know it, they would have sent it along with the coat. Exactly what she had said to Keisha, Lizzie thought, skewered by her own logic. Yes, ma'am. And of course, people do make anonymous donations when they have an item that they want to get into good hands and don't want to reveal who they are. If you know that, then why aren't you leaving it alone? Lizzie shook her head. That curiosity you've accused me of having too much of, she said, smiling. It's the note, you see. What note, Miss Alice said. You might as well spill it out. We got this far. There was a note with the coat. Just one sentence on a page torn out of a spiral notebook. It said, sending you this before I meet my maker. Uh-huh, Miss Alice said. Old woman getting her house in order. That did occur to me. But what does sending a coat to the Institute have to do with getting her house in order? Is she giving away all her worldly goods? Could be. Could be a coat she kept since she was young. Could be letting it go as her way of making herself humble. So she sent it to me rather than giving it to one of her relatives. Maybe she thought you'd appreciate having it for your Institute more than her relatives would if they got their hands on it. Could have thought they'd just sell it. Well, one of them must have helped her get it to the delivery company office. Then she must have one relative that she gets along with, Miss Alice said. Or she could be one of them old white women with a housekeeper. Whoever she is, she's probably well off, or at least once was. The coat is tailored, so she didn't buy and wear it off the rack. So find yourself an old, wealthy white woman on her deathbed, and maybe you find out who sent you a fancy coat. Lizzie laughed. Thank you, Miss Ellis. Don't be thanking me, child. If you get yourself in trouble over this and that man of yours takes back his ring, don't you be saying I had nothing to do with it. I won't, ma'am. Here it comes now, Miss Ellis said. You timed that about right, didn't you? Lizzie turned and watched John Quinn stride towards them. What Miss Ellis had said was true. Several female heads turned to note Quinn's progress. When he reached their table, he bowed slightly to Miss Ellis. How are you, Miss Ellis? May I say that seeing you always makes my day. Miss Ellis gave him one of her looks and then smiled back at him. Getting mighty smooth ways for a Yankee, ain't you? Come set yourself down here beside me. Quinn squeezed Lizzie's shoulder and went around the table to take his seat on Miss Ellis's other side. Lizzie closed the flap of her shoulder bag over the photograph that she had slipped inside. No point in spoiling Quinn's lunch. The librarian she had hoped to find on duty in the reference room at the Gallagher Public Library was not there. Out sick, her colleague said, and asked if she could help. Lizzie explained what she was looking for. I'll see what we have in the vertical file, the librarian said. That may give you an idea where to start with the newspaper microfilm. I'm sure you'll be able to find information about what the Gallagher Society women were wearing during that era. I think it's a wonderful idea to do a clothing exhibition. Lizzie mentally crossed her fingers. She had not lied. She had told the librarian more or less the truth about her intentions. What she had not mentioned was that she was hoping to find information about one particular young woman, or maybe a stylish matron, who had worn an eye-catching black velvet evening coat. A couple of hours later, Lizzie closed the last scrapbook and stacked it on top of the file folders of assorted photographs, ads, and other memorabilia from the 1930s and 40s that had been in the vertical file. She had been reminded that the 1930s in Gallagher began with a strike by the local textile workers that ended in the eviction of the outspoken leaders from their home in the mill village. But by 1939, the cotton mill was coming back from the lean times that it experienced during the Great Depression and gearing up for the prosperity of the war years. In 1939, the scholar O'Hara doll had been available for sale in Gallagher. And in the years between 1930 and 1939, while many Gallagher residents had struggled to survive, the lucky few had continued to attend events like the premiere of Gone with the Wind in Atlanta. The coat would have been perfect for that kind of evening. Lizzie stood up and stretched. She could try to come back tomorrow to work her way through the microfilm of the Gallagher Gazette, but she might not be able to get away if she was still dealing with follow-up from the conference. Having a successful conference meant that the attendees went home and emailed later with ideas that had occurred to them and that they wanted to share. And there were other things that she needed to catch up on. All right, it was almost 4 o'clock. She could put in another 2 or 3 hours. If she assumed Carol Barker, the woman at the vintage shop, was right and the coat had probably been made in the mid-1930s, then she could pick up her search through the newspaper in 1935, scour the society pages, reading the descriptions of what local women had worn to various events, and hope that there was mention of a black velvet evening coat with a claret red cowl. At 8:30, when the announcement came that the library would be closing in half an hour, Lizzie admitted to herself that she was not going to find anything that evening. It took forever to go through even 1 year of a newspaper. She'd only made it through 1935 and half of 1936. Taking off her evening glasses, she rubbed at her eyes. The life of a crime historian. Crooks in an ache and eye strain. The microfilm reel spun to the end. She grabbed it before it could unwind and turn off the microfilm machine. All right, come at it from the other direction. What if the woman who had sent the coat really had been about to meet her maker? What if she had died soon after sending the coat? Or she might even have written a note and left instructions about the coat. And after she had died, a relative, maybe one who had been irritated and hurried as she cleaned out the old woman's house and sorted through her possessions, this relative had found herself with one more chore to do. Suppose this hypothetical relative had dropped off the coat, seen the delivery truck, and instead of going in and standing in line, left the coat beside the truck, left it feeling she had done quite enough by making the effort to send an old coat to the designated recipient. Or what if Miss Alice had been on target with her suggestion? What if it had been the old woman's housekeeper who had dropped off the coat? Getting on in age herself and too tired to stand in line for one of her employer's whims. Obituaries. Lizzie glanced at her watch. She had time to have a quick look through the obituaries for the past couple of weeks. The library would have recent editions of the newspaper in print, much faster to flip through a newspaper by hand than search microfilm on a reel. She was down to the last newspaper and about to give up when another thought occurred to her. No obituary for an elderly white socialite. But what if the woman who had died was the housekeeper? What if the coat had been given to the housekeeper by her employer? A cast-off, no longer worn, weeded out as the employer went through her closet, passed on to the housekeeper decades ago, and never or rarely worn. Except the problem was the note. Sending you this before I meet my maker. The note could almost be read as a confession of a misdeed. An attempt to make something right. What if the woman who had sent the coat had acquired it in a way that she thought would put her in the wrong with her maker? A coat taken from the closet of an employer who had passed away. An old coat that none of the relatives might have known about or realized was missing, but a guilty secret for the housekeeper who had taken it. Another look through the obituaries then. This time for a woman lower in the social strata. Women, probably black, who might have been housekeepers. It was 9:05, and the librarian had warned her that they were about to close when Lizzie found the obituary that she was looking for. She froze for a moment, stunned that it was actually there. Then she made a dash for the copy machines. She needed to get a copy of the obituary before they put her out. The woman who opened the door of the two-story blue shingle house looked as if she might be having second thoughts. "Are you Professor Stewart?" "Yes, I am. Thank you so much for letting me come by. I know my telephone call this morning must have seemed a bit odd." "I'm used to odd," the woman said. "Half my family's crazy. The other half will be before it's over with." Lizzie laughed. "I do my best to remember that we aren't responsible for our relatives' various forms of insanity." "You have some of those too, huh?" "Just one," Lizzie said, thinking of her mother, Becca. "But she's a doozy." "Come on in, Professor." "Lizzie, please." "I'm Pat," Patricia Frazier said. "And like I told you on the phone, I don't have a lot of time today. I'm due at the hospital in about an hour." "You're a nurse?" "I wish. I work at the reception desk." She gestured at the sofa where a yellow tabby was curled up. Lizzie glanced at the tabby, regretting the navy blue skirt she was wearing. She sat down. Sure enough, the cat rose, arched its back in a stretch, and climbed into her lap. Obviously, the cat couldn't smell traces of Quinn's dog, George. "If you don't like cats, I can put him in the kitchen," Pat said. "No, I'm fine," Lizzie said. "So, Mrs. King was your aunt?" "Great aunt. Aunt Nez was a riot. Only one of my relatives I really enjoyed having around." "And she lived here with you?" "With me and my daughter, Jen. I'm divorced. My husband was even harder to get along with than my relatives." "About your Aunt Nez. You said you wanted to know about her having been a housekeeper. You're doing some kind of research?" No, not about housekeepers, or at least that wasn't how it started out. As I told you on the phone, I'm the director of a new institute on Southern crime and culture at Piedmont U. And the truth is, I'm here about a coat.
A coat?
A coat from the 1930s. Someone sent it to me without a return address. I'm trying to identify the person who owned it, because I want to include it in an exhibition at the institute. I'm hoping the person who sent it to me can tell me more about the coat. Pat nodded, as if she had followed that rambling explanation. How does that bring you to my aunt? There was a note with the coat. The person who wrote it said she was going to meet her maker. I went through the obituaries in the Gazette for the past 2 weeks, and I saw your aunt's obituary. Her obituary mentioned that she had been a professional domestic. Pat smiled. My daughter came up with that description. She said anyone who had worked for over 50 years cooking and cleaning other people's houses and putting up with their efforts to give her grief was entitled to call herself a professional. I agree with that, Lizzie said. My grandmother worked as a maid in a hotel before she was married. The cat nudged her hand and she stroked his head. Your great-aunt Nez. What I wondered was whether she might have been given the coat that someone sent to me, maybe by one of the women she had worked for, and maybe before she died might have asked that it be sent along to me. And that, Lizzie thought, sounded a lot more logical before I said it out loud. Pat shook her head. Sorry, you've got the wrong woman. I packed up Nez's things after she died. She had trunks and boxes that she brought with her from her house when she moved in with us and that we stored in the attic. I sent everything that was still wearable to Goodwill and the church clothing drive. Lizzie shifted the cat and reached for her shoulder bag. She might as well go for broke. Let me show you a photograph of the coat. Maybe you'll remember having seen it at some point. She dug out the photograph. Pat looked at it and shook her head again. Gorgeous coat, she said. But I've never seen it before. Dead end, Lizzie thought. She patted her feline lap warmer one more time and put him down on the sofa. Her skirt was now covered with yellow fur. Was her cleaning bill tax deductible as a research expense? Well, thank you for taking the time to talk with me, she said to Pat Frazier. No problem. Sorry I couldn't help. They'd almost reached the front door when it was flung open. A teenage girl darted in and eased the door shut behind her. She peeped out at the street. Robert, she said over her shoulder. Pat said, if you want that boy to ask you to the dance, you're going to have to start running away from him. The girl turned. But if we're talking and he doesn't, then it'll be really embarrassing. Pat looked at Lizzie and shrugged. This is Jen, my 14-year-old daughter, who's crazy about the boy across the street. I'm not crazy about him, the girl said. On her dignity now. I think he's reasonably intelligent compared to most boys and generally interesting. Her brown gaze met Lizzie's. I'm sorry for bursting in like that. I didn't know we had company. I understand. Sometimes it can get complicated with a man. Jen tilted her head. What happened with the man you were interested in? Lizzie held out her left hand. It all came right in the end. She glanced at Pat. Would it be okay if I showed your daughter the photograph of the coat? Go ahead, Pat said. But I'm sure if I haven't seen the coat, then she hasn't. What coat? Jen said. What's this about? Lizzie took the photograph out of her shoulder bag. This coat. Do you recognize it? Have you seen it before? Jen groaned. I knew Aunt Nez was up to something. Pat stared at her daughter. Are you telling me your aunt had a black velvet coat? How come I never saw it? Because Aunt Nez asked me to keep it in my room. When she came to live with us, she showed it to me and she asked me to keep it in my room. Jen folded her slender arms and hunched her shoulders. She wanted me to keep it hidden until she decided what to do with it because she didn't want Cousin Zoe or one of the others coming over to visit and seeing it in her closet and wanting it. And it didn't occur to you to tell me about it, her mother said, her own arms folded now. Mom, she asked me not to tell anyone. Lizzie said, did your aunt mention how she came to have the coat? She said she used to be a housekeeper for this family a long time ago, and a daughter had given her the coat before she went away. Before your aunt went away?
No, the daughter. She said the daughter went away.
Went where? Lizzie said.
She didn't tell me. She didn't really want to talk about it. She just wanted me to keep the coat in my room. So I put the box in the back of my closet and just left it there until she told me what to do with it. Her mother said, and when was that?
When she was in the hospital.
Before she caught pneumonia. I went by to see her, and she said she'd seen this black professor on TV talking about some kind of center she had started at the university. Aunt Nez said when she died, she wanted me to send the coat to this professor. I told her she wasn't going to die, but she made me give her a sheet of paper from my notebook, and she told me after she died to find the professor's address and send her the coat.
Lizzie said, so you found this professor's address?
Jen nodded. It took me a while to figure out what Aunt Nez had been looking at on TV, but I finally figured out it must have been the noontime news. And then I called all three stations and asked who they had been interviewing that day. That was how I figured it out.
Good thinking, Lizzie said.
I'm Lizzie Stewart, by the way.
You are?
Oh, rats. There was something wrong about the coat, wasn't there?
Nothing that I know about, Lizzie said. I've just been trying to figure out who sent it so I could get some more information for an exhibition that I want to use it in.
She paused, and I didn't wonder why the person who sent it dropped it off beside a delivery truck.
Did what? Patricia said, whirling on her daughter.
Your aunt asked you to send this coat, and you?
I got scared, Mom,
Jen said. Aunt Nez was so peculiar about the coat that I thought there might be something wrong about it, that she'd stolen it or something. So I didn't put a return address on the label. And then when I got to the delivery company, I was afraid if I went in, they'd have me on surveillance camera or something. So I just put it beside the truck with the money and hoped they would take it.
They did, Lizzie said. Thank you for sending it.
You're welcome. I'm glad you got it okay. Aunt Nez wanted you to have it.
Jen, is there anything else you can tell me about the woman who gave your aunt the coat?
I thought you said there was nothing wrong.
There isn't, as far as I know, but it would be nice when we do the exhibition to be able to identify the owner of the coat.
Maybe the owner wouldn't want people to know it was her coat.
Why do you say that? Her mother said. What did Nez tell you about the coat?
Nothing, Mom. It's just like I told you. She was peculiar about it. Like she had it and she had to keep it, but she didn't like having it.
Pat glanced at her watch.
I'm sorry, she said to Lizzie. I've got to get to work.
Then I'll go, Lizzie said. Thank you both for your time.
She was halfway to her car when Jen called out to her. Paris, she said from the doorway. I think the woman who gave Aunt Nez the coat might have gone to Paris.
Why do you think that?
Aunt Nez's photo album. There was an old newspaper article stuck in the back.
A newspaper article?
May I see it?
Pat Frazier frowned when she came into the living room carrying her jacket and purse, and so Lizzie was back in her house.
Jen remembered that your great aunt had a photo album with a newspaper article. She went upstairs to get it.
Pat hesitated. I need to leave, she said.
I'm sorry, Lizzie said.
Jen came bounding back down the stairs.
Here's the article. I've looked through the photograph album before. There isn't anyone wearing the coat, or I would have remembered. Most of the people are black, except for some pictures of little white children, but maybe there's something in the article.
She held it out.
Thank you, Lizzie said. Is it okay if I take this with me and make a copy? I promise to return it to you.
You can keep it, Jen said. It's just an old article.
She hesitated and then held out the opaque black plastic bag in her other hand.
And I better give you these too.
I was supposed to send them with the coat.
Lizzie took the bag.
What?
High heel shoes, Jen said. They're really cool. They're too big for me right now, but I thought my feet might grow.
When your feet start growing, you won't be wishing for that, her mother said.
Lizzie drew the black velvet slippers out of the bag and stared down at them.
There's a stain on the heel inside of one of them, Jen said.
I thought when I got ready to wear them, I could take them to a shoe repair store and they might be able to get it out. Or maybe no one would notice that much anyway.
Lizzie said, your Aunt Nez wanted you to send me both the coat and the shoes.
Jen nodded.
I shouldn't have kept the shoes. I'm sorry.
That's okay, Lizzie said.
Thank you for giving them to me. I'm going to go now and get out of you and your mother's way. In her office at the Institute, Lizzie took the box containing the coat from her closet. She stretched the coat across the back of her desk chair and set the matching black velvet shoes on the floor in front of the chair. Then she leaned against her desk, staring at the coat and the shoes. She reached again for the newspaper article that Jen had given her. The daughter of the family Nez had worked for had been named Regina Seabrook. She had gone back to Europe, to Paris, after the death of her stepfather. Lizzie put the article down and tilted her head to steady the stain on the side of the right shoe. Something step in or splash, maybe wine. A stain on a shoe, a stepfather had fallen down a flight of stairs. Oh, hell, she said aloud. The rip in the lining of the coat had been sewn up. How had it gotten there in the first place? Probably normal wear and tear, Carol Barker had said. But could it have happened some other way? The rip was on the right side, about calf length. Lizzie glanced towards her closed door. Keisha was gone for the day. It should be safe. Her skirt was covered in cat fur. She would have to take it off. She locked the door of her office and stepped out of the skirt. Then she slipped into the coat. It enveloped her in warmth. She could almost smell the perfume that must have clung to it when Regina Seabrook wore it. The black velvet slippers were too small. She would have to do her experiment with her own black pumps. She walked across the room, letting the coat whirl around her. That was when she felt it. Something to him, something that banged against her ankle as she moved. She took off the coat and stretched it over the chair again. Feeling along the hem, she found it. A cylinder, small, inconspicuous. Neither she nor Carol Barker noticed it when the heavy coat was on the hanger. Lizzie opened her desk drawer and reached for her scissors. Easier to pick apart a few of the fancy stitches holding the hem together than open a tear in the lining that had been sewn up. The cylinder was slender, the shape and size to hold a fountain pen, with a rubber stopper. A bit of the stopper broke off as she pulled it out. A sheet of notepaper, onion skin and elegant, had been rolled up to fit inside the cylinder. Dearest Nez, I am in Paris and well again. 3 days later, Lizzie was sitting in her office again when Quinn strode in. He closed the door behind him. She had told him she was trying to keep Keisha from asking questions. The lab results are back, he said. You were right. Then the stain on the shoe was, is blood, human blood. So it's possible that the nasty tumble that Regina Seabrook's stepfather took down the stairs. Lizabeth, as I seem to recall reminding you, old blood on a shoe isn't sufficient reason to exhume a body. But the letter might be, Lizzie thought. The letter she still had not shown to Quinn because before he had been a university police chief, he had been a Philadelphia homicide detective. He thought like a cop about crime and culpability. But if the body were exhumed, she said, the medical examiner would probably be able to make a determination. Be able to determine if there were injuries that suggest foul play. Probably. If the injuries were caused by the heel of a shoe. Lizzie glanced at the folder tucked into the inbox of her desk, the folder that contained the old newspaper article that Jen had given her. She had read it often enough to memorize it. In March 1939, Regina Seabrook's friends in Gallagher had gathered to wish her a sad bon voyage before she left for New York City to sail for France. Miss Seabrook had studied in Paris, and she was going back there for an indefinite stay following the tragic death of her stepfather. Regina Seabrook had died in France during World War II. They knew that from Quinn's sources. Death from consumption after 4 years among the expatriates who had been in Europe when the war began. Many of those expatriates had come home to America, but Regina Seabrook had stayed. Lizzie looked up and met Quinn's gaze. Pat Frazier called me today. She had a call from a lawyer who received notice of her great-aunt's death. He wanted to let her know that her aunt had established a trust fund for Jen, Pat's daughter. A trust fund, Quinn said. Where did the aunt get the money to set up a trust fund? Back in 39, before she left for Europe, Regina Seabrook asked her lawyer to set up and administer an account for Nez King, her former housekeeper. She deposited $10,000 into that account. Back in 1939, that would have been a small fortune, Quinn said. Yes, rather an extravagant gift, even for someone who was like a member of the family. Wealthy white folks used to say that about their servants. So I've heard. But Nez King never touched the money. It simply accumulated interest until 3 years ago when she contacted the law firm and asked that the money be placed in a trust fund to be used for her great-niece's daughter's college education. Lizzie reached for a mug containing lukewarm peppermint tea and took a sip. Pat called me because after my visit, she was wondering why Regina Seabrook had given her great aunt $10,000. What did you say? That I didn't know any reason why she and Jen shouldn't accept the trust fund. What are you going to tell her now? Nothing, Lizzie said. I still don't know any reason why they shouldn't accept the money. Whatever Regina Seabrook might or might not have done with her high-heeled slipper, from what we'd learn about him, her stepfather wasn't a very nice man. In spite of the sanctimonious face he showed to the world, he seemed to have made the lives of the people working in his factory miserable. And he swooped in and married a wealthy widow. His stepdaughter might have found him difficult to live with if she thought he had made her mother as miserable as he made his employees, especially if he tried to get her under his thumb after her mother died. Would that justify helping him to take a tumble down the stairs? I don't know, Quinn. I don't know what he was doing at the time when he tumbled. And for all we know, the blood might have gotten on Regina Seabrook's shoes when she rushed her stepfather's aid after he fell. We don't even know if the blood is his. Lizzie focused her attention on the sparrows sitting on her windowsill, avoiding Quinn's gaze. The fall could have been exactly what it seemed, an accident. Quinn said, one drank too many and unsteady on his feet. Lizzie nodded, good brandy and a good cigar. He was supposed to have enjoyed both. So that's it? You're going to let this go? As you have been suggesting, I do. Whatever Regina Seabrook gave her housekeeper all that money, it can now be put to good use to provide a bright young woman with an excellent education. And what about the black velvet coat? I don't think I want to do an exhibition just now. Don't you, Quinn said? I'm tired from the conference. Then, Professor Stewart, why don't we get out of here and go home? Lizzie sighed and reached for the folder containing the article Jen had given her. Good idea, she said. She opened her bottom desk drawer and dropped the folder on top of the slender cylinder she had stored there. But she had read the letter in the cylinder often enough to know it by heart, too. Dearest Nez, Regina Seabrook had written, I am in Paris and well again, in both mind and body. Although you didn't say it, I know you're afraid of what I might do. I know you're afraid that I wouldn't be able to live with what we did. But I can live with both, Nez. He was an evil man. He killed my mother as surely as if he had put a gun to her head. The bearish child would have destroyed me. I would never forget you, Nez, and I will be happy, I promise. So take care of yourself and don't worry about me. All my love, always, Gina. She ought to show the letter to Quinn, Lizzie thought. She had brought him into this, so she should show him the letter, but not right now. She closed the drawer of her desk and turned the key in the lock. Quinn was watching. She gave him a bright smile. Did you think your first cold case investigation would come by way of your fiancé? Knowing you, love, I might have predicted it, but since neither you nor I are getting paid for this one, and Wade expects his new partner to work on a case to put money in the coffers, right? His gray gaze narrowed. Lizabeth, is there something else? And sometimes poking around can do more harm than good. So, Quinn, I will now cease and desist. Will you? Yes, I have every intention of doing just that. Whatever Nez King had intended when she asked her niece to send the coat and the shoes to that professor she had seen being interviewed about her institute, there was nothing else to be done. Maybe Nez had wanted to confess. Maybe she had wanted someone to know a guilty secret that she was about to take to her grave. But if she had wanted to confess, she had been incredibly evasive. She probably not wanted the coat to fall into the hands of one of her relatives, who might have found the cylinder containing Regina Seabrook's letters. And what in the devil had she expected Lizzie to do with the truth even if she found it? That was the thing about asking questions of the dead. Sometimes they mock you by refusing to explain themselves. Lizzie reached for her shoulder bag and dropped the key to her desk drawer into the zippered side pocket. Case closed, Quinn. Let's get out of here and go home.
In Her Fashion is copyrighted by Frankie Y. Bailey. Music for the podcast by Tommy Dorsey was obtained from the Internet Archive and is in the public domain. Mixing for the podcast was done by Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at www.themysteryplace.com/EQMM.